Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The 25th day of February 2014. It's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find entree into the chat room, which I encourage you to jump into. Folks will be wandering by as the program gets a little deeper into the program. You'll also find our brand new shiny Listen Live button, which you can use to listen there at your desktop. Of course, if you're on a mobile device of some sort, we highly recommend the apps from Stitcher and TuneIn. They are both quite handy and quite good. The pay version, I think, is a little bit better than the so-called light version. And please remember that any ads that you may hear for any disgusting oil company or anything like that on TuneIn come from us, and we are not being compensated by any oil companies. No, we are not. So, you know, alternatives. It's all about the alternatives. Also, of course, do check back by periodically at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com because we're posting news stories there every day that we think you will be of some interest to you and to the Horn family at large. You will also find there the PayPal button. That is how we keep all of this going, how we keep this little effort on the air and have managed to do so for coming, well, all told for 10 years now. And most of that 10 years has been because of you. So thank you very, very kindly. This evening we begin, got a kind note from our buddy Tom in California, who got us started this evening with a kind contribution that, so instead of beginning the evening, you know, we had a $100 shortfall last night. And, so as a result, we were going to start with a $250 goal this evening. It's been now knocked down to $125. And I've got good news because we also have Sparky, our longtime chat room moderator and moderator extraordinaire of the Horn Molloy Skype chat group. Sparky has put on the table this evening his pull the pin challenge. And that means that there's $100 on the table as long as there are people who are willing to match $100, which would go all the way to just short of $25 from getting us up to speed with fundraising as we limp out of the month of February. And it's not that the limping isn't so much a financial thing as it is just a I don't know, spiritual, emotional, existential thing. Oh, goodbye, February. Go away, go away. Ugh. Because, well, you know, usually, at least here in Appalachia, we get a couple of little gentle hints that winter will end and that we will someday feel warmth on our faces again. That has apparently been delayed. We are experiencing plummeting temperatures. We've got a low tonight of 23, which is tolerable. Then tomorrow night's low is 16, and the low Thursday night is 9. Ugh. Which means, you know, hey, Pa, put another bottle of propane on the right. So that's where we are. So if as long as there are members of the Horn family who want to kick in $100, Sparky is willing to match that with his own $100 pull the pin challenge. And gosh, I hope that happens. I really, really do. There are bills constantly in need of paying around here, and that's, as noted, how we keep all of this going. Let's see. It is Titanic Tuesday, which means we try to focus on moments of profound brilliance, that's said sarcastically, amongst the right wing. And what more so than this story, Isaac and a number of you have pointed this out to me. Wow. Talk about Titanic intellect. In this country, our gun-mad culture is obsessed with proving that, you know, there ain't nothing wrong with having a gun. It's patriotic. We's barming bears and bear arms, right? Because one of these days, them jackbooted, blue-helmeted thugs of that Kenyan Muslim anti-colonialist deep-seated hatred of white people, Obama's going to send people through the doors just to get our guns and maybe send us off to one of them Obama FEMA re-education camps. And we ain't going to stand for it because we're Americans. Right? And guns don't kill people. People kill people. Right? Dateline somewhere in Michigan. Oakland County, Michigan, as a matter of fact. Not too awfully far from Detroit. That's Oakland County that has the county administrator or whatever he is who advised people never to stop for gasoline in Detroit. I mean, you're just begging to be raped or murdered or robbed or, right, the racist bastard. Can't remember what the guy's name is right now. Well, our first example of Titanic intellect comes from Oakland County, Michigan, where a Bubba, and remember, one need not be a resident of south of the Mason-Dixie line in order to be a Bubba, where a Bubba took his guns after having a few, apparently, and he was doing some, what he was doing, this whole thing developed because he was doing some mansplaining for his girlfriend. Yeah. Made it 36 years on this planet, and in year 36, the stupid caught up with him. The Second Amendment-driven stupid. Because, of course, the Second Amendment guarantees the right to bear arms as long as you are a member of a well-regulated militia, but the Supreme Court of the United States said all that well-regulated militia stuff was just so much boilerplate. Sure it is. Well, there it was in Independence Township, Oakland County, Michigan. Happened this past Sunday night, in which a woman and her boyfriend were sitting, I guess, discussing the merits of firearms, at which point our genius in question declared, "All guns are safe as long as they're unloaded." And to prove his point, got out three handguns. He took handgun number one, placed it to his head, and pulled the trigger. Click. "See? As long as they're unloaded, they're completely safe." Took handgun number two, placed the barrel, the muzzle against his head, pulled the trigger, and click. Perfectly safe. As long as you maintain your guns in good order and you make sure that you know which one's loaded and which one's not, they're all perfectly safe. I mean, it's no different than a hammer or a screwdriver. They're just tools. Picks up handgun number three, places it against the muzzle against the side of his head, and bang! And dead. For some reason or another, the Oakland County Medical Examiner feels the need to perform an autopsy. I don't know if they're looking, well, for some portion of his brain left that's just labeled stupid. Oh, Bob, come on. Can't you have some sympathy? I mean, there's a lot of people are sad out of this. Yeah, I know a little bit about that. I know how sad it can make you. I know how you can be 51 years old and still have dreams of the 16-year-old brother who never saw year 17. Because someone assumed a handgun was unloaded, pointed it at the side of his head, and pulled the trigger. Only it wasn't unloaded. Yeah, it's horrifying. But Jesus, really? This is the ultimate outcome of the paranoid fantasies of the gun crazy right. Whatever it is that drove that conversation, that drove this fella who'd had apparently had a few. I mean, what is it? If you're going to do that, does it somehow reduce one's machismo if you check to make sure there really isn't a round in the chamber before you do it? Because you just have to prove that, you know, I always make sure I know which gun's unloaded and which one's loaded. Yeah. For that matter, if you're absolutely hell-bent on doing this, why not go out in the front yard? Or out in the backyard? Or maybe down to the range? Or for that matter, why point it at your head? Why not point it at the ground? I mean, it's going to... If something should go, oh, why do we bother? The news report from CBS Detroit says merely, as noted, the girlfriend said the victim had been drinking most of the day, and sheriff's officials said alcohol appears to have been a factor in the shooting. Sounds like a story from Alabama, but no, it's Michigan. Which has given up on the notion of good government. Witness their governor and the loss of workers' rights in that state. They're trying to be Alabama, and this guy just took them one step closer. There were, by the way, 3 children in the home. They were not his biological children, but I think when one gets down to the point of talking about gunplay inside a home, the biological relationship between the person handling the guns, the drunk person handling the guns, and the children themselves becomes rather irrelevant. Email coming in from Jim, who says, Russian roulette, hell, I'll take blackjack or beach blanket bingo. This guy's nuts. Well, I confess I never studied the rules of Russian roulette. And isn't Russian roulette kind of, and this isn't directed to Jim, this is a larger inquiry, isn't Russian roulette kind of a slur? Sort of like the way some people talk about Mexican firing squads? Or is it a practice that began in Russia? I honestly don't know. It just always seemed kind of unfair. Why don't we call it really stupid handgun roulette? Yeah. Don't know. But we We have apparently reached a place in this country where, as Jack in Shreveport notes, even basic assumptions that the good gun handling Bubbas were always taught, i.e., a responsible gun owner has always been taught, as far as I know, that the rule is that one should always assume a gun is loaded. Even that has gone by the board in this frenzy of paranoid, manic fear that somehow that one in their White House is going to come and get their guns and freedom's going to die and the flag is falling and... No, there are two rules. One is to assume that any firearm is loaded, and until proven, conclusively proven otherwise, and one does not prove that by sticking the muzzle against one's head and pulling the trigger. And here, and there's a corollary in the broadcast world that one always assumes a microphone is live. That's especially applicable when one is broadcasting out on the government-censored terrestrial airwaves, where merely saying booger can cost you $475,000. It's costly, just the same as assuming a firearm is unloaded can be even more costly. You guys, now I'm getting cues from the Horn family. This from Marty. Marty writes, Bob, you forgot to echo Wolverines! Yeah. You know what? I was tickled pink the other day. I saw a Wolverines reference on Charlie Pierce's Esquire politics blog, and I was like, wow. Hey, Charlie. Jesus. But that's, you know, it's okay. It's okay. Oh, but America is completely on board with having drunk people play with firearms and kill themselves in front of someone that they presumptively care a lot about. And yeah, this arises out of mansplaining, and mansplaining, oh dear God. No, honey, what you just don't understand about the nature of protecting freedom in America. You always got to know about whether your guns is loaded or... This is a house where he lived with her, in which there were three children, and he apparently didn't know one of the guns was loaded. What, is this one of those try to find the silver lining things, and we're just happy that we're not reported talking about a situation in which a 12-year-old shot his or her 7-year-old sibling? Asked for comment, the 36-year-old live-in boyfriend said, well, I was sure they were all unloaded. Sure, were you? Sure? Yeah. Yeah, I'm with Jim. I'd much prefer blackjack or beach blanket bingo or spin the bottle or who knows. And thanks very much to Asa and to Jeremy for getting us started this evening. We are now only $75 away from meeting Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge, and that is most helpful. Thank you. Thank you very much, both of you. Where do you go after a story like that? More stupid? Because there is more stupid. How about a K Street lobbyist? Well, I don't know if he's actually on K Street, but a Washington, D.C. lobbyist named Jack Berkman. Now, this guy has been, among other things, counsel to a member of Congress, Rick Lazio, a right-wing Republican from New York. He currently represents medical, like lobbies for companies and that manufacture medical devices and clean energy, really? And some pharmaceutical companies. Yeah. Well, Jack Berkman has decided to chime in on the issue of Michael Sams, who, as we all know, came out a little while back and is being evaluated, one would presume, even as we speak, at the, or maybe not even as we speak, but at the NFL combines. And Jack Berkman is really, really upset about the fact that there might be a homosexual in the No Fun League. I mean, the National Football League. I mean, really upset. He has gone so far as to draft and tender what he hopes will be a bill to ban gay people from playing football in the NFL. Yeah. In the statement that he issued on Monday, he said, "We are losing our decency as a nation. Imagine your son being forced to shower with a gay man. That's a horrifying prospect for every mom in the country. What in the world has this nation come to?" He went on and said, "If the NFL has no morals and no values, then Congress must find values for it." Oh, really? The NFL that buried its own head injury problem. The NFL that has players who are who find themselves in trouble in strip joints and involved at least tangentially in murder. All of that, Jack Berkman remains silent. Michael Sams comes out as gay, and suddenly the NFL has no morals and no values. Right. And then, as Marty notes, the idea of the Congress of the United States finding morals for anybody is so laughable as to be rendered just silly. Now, apparently, Jack Berkman is a shameless self-promoter. Because after doing all of this, he admitted that it was a publicity stunt. And this publicity stunt of his, he says, has already garnered the interest, this according to an article in Slate, has already garnered the interest of at least 5 right-wing Republicans. And at least 1 conservative senator. One can only guess who the conservative senator might be. Ted Cruz? Mike Lee?
Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III?
One simply doesn't know. On the other hand, people are not taking the publicity stunt any too well. Daniel Pencina, a principal at the Rabin Group, according to Think Progress, and president of Q Street, an association of LGBT lobbyists and advocates, told Think Progress, Berkman's clients should not only be concerned with being associated with his views, but also his judgment and competence as an advocate. Ultimately, he's promoting his public image at the expense of his clients. That raises real questions about whether he can adequately represent his clients' interests before policymakers. Of course, I am a silver lining kind of guy, and I can't help but think, Jack Berkman, yeah. Oh, you're here to talk to me today about the needs of your giant pharmaceutical client? Yeah, okay, why don't you get out? I mean, it could work out as a positive. But then again, what's this about him being a lobbyist for clean energy? Hey, maybe this is all just a tiger trap. Maybe by putting this out there and getting a whole bunch of right-wing weirdos to jump on board behind it, you know, say your Louis Gohmerts. I mean, there's five members of Congress already interested in a congressionally mandated, ban on gay men in the NFL. Can we just, of course, you know, Steve King. Louis Gohmert, maybe? I mean, come on, make the calls. These right-wing Republicans, you know, we need to get government off of people's backs, unless, of course, government's muddling around in women's reproductive organs, or maybe peeping underneath over the transom to find out what's going on in bedrooms and see if anybody's having sex the wrong way. Yeah. Note coming in from Jeremy in Vermont. Rubber and Velcro, a little better with vodka. Yeah, can't have any of that gay in the NFL. Even though it's quite obvious there have been gay NFL players before. It's just a matter of having someone say so while playing. But apparently, this country has an almost limitless ability to tolerate hate and bigotry. Greenbacker Renewable Energy is one of his clients, and David Scherr of that company said, "I personally do not agree with his positions, nor are they the positions of Greenbacker." Ed St. Armour of GPROP, an international business company, whatever that means, said, "I think those positions are a little bizarre. It certainly wouldn't be anything the company would participate in. They're not our values at all." And then there's Bruce Brimacombe, who is the founder and CEO of GOE3 and Jeslin Media. He said, "I believe in doing things that will bring this country together, not pull it apart." GOE3 is an electric car company, by the way. He said apparently GOE3 hasn't been getting just a hell of a lot of Berkman's attentions. And he said, "We're not high on his priority list. I think he'd spend his time doing that." But see, there's a lot of money, and I do mean a lot of money,
in hate. Oodles of money. Tons of money in hate.
And frankly, you know, somebody like Jack Berkman doesn't give a good goddamn where he's getting the money as long as he is getting the money. And the hate-filled, bigoted freaks of the right wing, well, they'll pay to have their positions put out there. They really will. Now, granted, this is not prayer meeting Wednesday, but where this is concerned, it's really this is a genius situation. So we're not gonna limit ourselves to Wednesday just because it happens to be a religious tint or flavor or whatnot. No. Consequently, it is I bet you know who we're going to be talking about, don't you? Sure, why not? This is easy, right? I mean, everybody from the NFL who is urging the governor of Arizona to move carefully before doing something as stupid as signing this what do we call this? Jim Gay Crow law into a bill into law in Arizona. Well, just remember, the other side has a lot of money and a lot of crazy, and it's the money, not necessarily. And you know, Berkman will tolerate the crazy in the name of getting the money. I mean, there's a long history of right wing people doing that. Think Jack Abramoff, and I didn't even know you could do that to Abram. Enter. Don't chew all the way through the tennis ball and the straps yet, Jeremy. Enter Brian Fisher. Stanford graduate. Aren't you proud?
You might have heard the Girl Scouts are in trouble. There's a boycott that's been called on the sale of Girl Scout cookies because of their affiliation with Planned Parenthood. The Girl Scouts have turned into a pro-Planned Parenthood, pro-abortion organization for girls. I mean, I would think most right-thinking moms and dads wouldn't want to have their girls have anything to do with an organization like Girl Scouts that's working arm-in-arm, linked with Planned Parenthood, to promote an abortion mentality among young girls. Anyway, they're selling their Girl Scout cookies right now, and one girl in San Francisco, she knows what marijuana does to people's appetite. She set up right outside a pot dispensary in the city in San Francisco, sold 117 boxes of Girl Scout cookies in 2 hours. Now, apparently down in Colorado, the Girl Scouts there have directed their girls to stay away from the pot shops. Now,
Time out. Jack, time out, okay? What happened to the right-wing adoration of the entrepreneurial free market spirit? Isn't that pretty smart? Setting up your Girl Scout cookie stand outside a place that might tend to be visited by people who either then or later will have an overwhelming case of the munchies, what Stanford graduate Brian Fisher points out as what marijuana does to the appetite. Do you know anything about that, Brian? Out of all that time you spent out there, Palo Alto, Bay Area, anything? Bueller? No? No, he was busy on his knees, praying, the entire time he was out there getting it. Then again, maybe it's like the Stanford back of the matchbook correspondence school of, I don't know, Stanford, Mississippi. Is there a Stanford, Mississippi? There's a Samford University in Birmingham that I think is run by the Baptists. Maybe it's a misprint. But ordinarily we would praise a person for being so, I mean, if the Girl Scouts sold lemonade, wouldn't it be smart if a Girl Scout set one up on, outside a health and fitness center where people had just gone running and exercising and athleticing and everything? Wouldn't that be smart? Oh, for heaven's sakes. But do go on, proud son of Palo Alto.
I want to talk just for a moment about what's going on in Arizona. The governor of Arizona, Jan Brewer, has a bill on her desk right now. It's passed both houses of the Arizona legislature. This is a bill that would protect religious liberty in Arizona for Christian businessmen, Christian business owners. We've been over this story.
Okay, I just want to check, because this is a religious liberty bill, or so they say. Does it not protect the rights of Hindu business owners to reject gay people? How about Jewish business owners? Can they reject gay people and refuse services to gay people? How about Muslim business owners? Under this religious liberty bill, do they get to reject refuse services to gay people? Because Brian here just said, Brian,
what have you been up to?
He says it only protects Christian business owners. Are Christians the only people who are filled with miserable, abject hatred for people who have sex the way that the Christians decide they shouldn't have it? I mean, Are all the other world religions just down with being gay now? And the poor little hate-filled, homophobic, bigoted, prejudiced Christians are the only ones that are out there on the outside looking in, shivering in the cold? I mean, religious liberty is religious liberty. It's not Christian religious liberty. Check me, but I don't think the word Christian or Christianity or Christ or Jesus or any of that appears in the First Amendment. Do they? No, I didn't think so. But do, please. Back to the guy from Stanford.
The Girl Scouts there have directed their girls to stay away from the pot shops. Now, I want to talk just for a moment about what's going on in Arizona. The governor of Arizona, Jan Brewer, has a bill on her desk right now. It's passed both houses of the Arizona legislature. This is a bill that would protect religious liberty in Arizona for Christian businessmen, Christian business owners. We've been over the stories about the baker in Oregon that could wind up going to jail because he wouldn't bake a cake to participate in a same-sex wedding ceremony, even though same-sex marriage is illegal in Oregon. We got a florist in Washington that's being sued by the attorney general. We've got the photographer in New Mexico that's fined $6,700 because she wouldn't participate in a same-sex ceremony, even though at the time same-sex relationships had no legal status of any kind in New Mexico. So Arizona legislature has put a bill on the desk of Governor Jan Brewer to sign this bill that would protect business owners in Arizona from being penalized by the state for running their businesses according to Christian conviction.
Me, I'd like to see a few more Christian convictions. Oh, never mind. Do you notice how we have our fun at Brian's expense? I can't tell if that's hair or a helmet on his head. But I mean, he looks like a sort of sagging at the jowls Race Bannon from Johnny Quest when you get right down to it. But, you know, we have our fun at his expense, but he is kind of a slick one. Did you notice how he said that same-sex relationships in New Mexico have no status whatsoever? Now, this is the same guy who says that all rights come from God.
Mm-hmm.
And he bemoans big government. And he wants government off our backs and into our bedrooms. Never mind. And yet, at the same time, apparently, he thinks that you can't be gay unless the government has somehow passed an It's Okay to Be Gay bill, never mind the fact that laws against so-called sodomy, as it applies to either Christians or heterosexuals or homosexuals, or Christians for that matter. I don't even want to think about Christians having sex. Scary. Well, we've had sex two times, and we have two children. But in just, you know, one little moment of babbling, he has declared that gay people simply don't exist because that big government has not declared that it's okay for them to have sex. Now, this guy is crazier than a sprayed roach. And if you had the money to put a pretty good private detective on him, I'm pretty sure you'd come up with some fairly interesting stuff. But Jeremy pointing out, Bob, Gollum from Lord of the Rings is a nicer and better looking and acting person than Brian could dream of being. It's a pity Ferg's not back here. He does a killer Gollum. But I just wanted to point out the way that they characterize these things. And you notice it's not when he talks about the Gay Crow or Jim Gay bill in Arizona. It's not about people refusing service. It's about the government not being able to punish people for refusing service. So he just leaps right over that whole all men are created equal business from the Declaration of Independence. When ordinarily like they like to thump on that the same way they thump on their Bibles. Really. Do proceed. Because this is just full of Lulus. Go on, Brian.
And so we are hoping that Jan Brewer will sign this thing, both of the senators, John McCain, Jeff Flake, they're out there telling her not to sign it. You get a lot of pressure from Big Gay not to...
I just love that phrase, Big Gay. And they picked that up because some of us talk about things like Big Oil or Big Pharma, who really are big and have profound abilities to influence vast shifts in the economic well-being of this country. Big Gay we've got now. Can you? I mean, does that phrase "big gay" give you any sort of a mental image? When in fact, there's nothing big about it at all. It is just a matter of ordinary, workaday American human beings who would like to be afforded the same rights that are afforded everybody else under the Constitution, but at present, they are not. Anyway, tell us, Brian. Tell us more about the big gay. How big, Brian? This big? That big? That big, Brian? When you're sitting there thinking,
Big day.
Penalized by the state for running their businesses according to Christian conviction. And so we are hoping that Jan Brewer will sign this thing. Both of the senators, John McCain, Jeff Flake, they're out there telling her not to sign it. You get a lot of pressure from Big Gay to sign this thing. But again, you know, it's an illustration of the larger fact, ladies and gentlemen, I've said before, we are going to have to choose between homosexuality and religious liberty because we cannot have both.
Why not? I mean, that's just a naked, well, probably not the best way to say that, a bare, no, it doesn't work either. That's just an assertion that one cannot, and it's insupportable. It is argument, one cannot support it at argument, that there, gayness does not account, cannot accord with freedom of religion. Because at one and the same time, if you say to Brian Fisher, proud son of Palo Alto, well, Brian, there are lots of gay Christians. His answer, of course, is no, there aren't. They're not Christians. They're going to burn in hell because they're having sex differently from how my twisted reading of a bad translation of a 2,000 to 3,000-year-old text says, nope, God doesn't, nope, not going to tolerate it, you're not going to have any. There are, God damn it, there are no disco balls in heaven. Right? So at the same time that he wants religious freedom, he insists on the right within that assertion to trample the religious freedom of others. So while he likes to talk about Big Gay and one wonders, I personally would love to see the headquarters of Big Gay. I can imagine it's just a tremendous, tremendous edifice. I mean, it's gotta be like one of the tallest buildings on earth, right? Because they've got so much power. They've got the gay agenda. They've got the ability to destroy the Constitution. I mean, is there like a Big Gay death ray? Or is it in our, is it in outer space? And it's able to destroy entire planets except for the fact that it's got, you know, one flaw that can be exploited by I don't know, Luke Straightwalker. Yeah, see, bald assertion doesn't work either, Irish Dave. Then, of course, Dan says, is that a Big Gay? Is that a subsidiary of Big Lubricating Oil? I mean, see, we don't know. Irish Dave pointing out, also, Andy Not-So-Breitbart named all his websites Big fill-in-the-blank. Though he's still dead, maybe his heirs have set up BigGay.com? Nah, surely not. I mean, you'd have to hope that maybe... oh, for heaven's sakes. But we're not even, we haven't even gotten to the fun part of Brian Fisher.
Every advance of the homosexual agenda comes at the expense of religious liberty, and we're seeing that right now in Arizona.
Again, one of those bald assertions. We'll stick with that. Every advance in the gay agenda comes at the expense of religious liberty. No, it doesn't. Not at all. Because, see, freaks like Brian Fisher are free to sit at home and hate gay people until hell freezes over. And I mean, they can sing songs in their churches about how much they hate gay people. They can hate, and do it in the loving spirit of Jesus Christ. They're free to do that. Absolutely free. But what these theocratic Taliban Christians want is the ability to make the state behave according to religious principles. or unprincipled, as the case may be. They want the right to enshrine their hate inside a secular government that they have decided that they despise. This is what you get out of the Christian Reconstruction and Christian Dominionist movements. And they're dangerous as hell. The fact that there's no less than four or five of these bills banging around out there tells you that this is a coordinated effort. Arizona, Kansas, Tennessee, Georgia. I guess it's been a while since I mentioned the Cold Civil War concept. Maybe it's time I mention it again, because this is a manifestation of it. These people are in open rebellion against the United States of America and we, the people, who are the guardians of that government. It's not the military. It's you and me. And see, for the most part, these goons have not yet taken up arms. But if you will read the constitutional definition of treason, you'll find that guns and shooting are not in the definition. Treason is the only crime that is defined within the Constitution of the United States. It was the only one serious enough that the framers felt like they had to take time to define in the enabling document of the Young Republic. Article 3 of the United States Constitution. defines treason. Article 3, Section 3. Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. Well, does war necessarily... I think most many of the great thinkers on conflict would suggest that there need not be a bunch of... We managed to wage war all over this planet long before the first gun was ever invented. Levying war against them, the United States, or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. Could we make the argument that... Well, for instance, Iran is an enemy of the United States, so to speak. And Iran is a theocracy in which homosexuals are treated much the way Brian Fisher would like to treat homosexuals in the United States. So when Brian Fisher makes noises that sound exactly like the policies of Iran's mullahs with regard to gay people, isn't he, by definition, giving aid and comfort to an enemy of the United States, and thereby is Brian Fisher not committing treason? What, then, is the nexus between free speech and treason? If one commits treason but does so under the guise of religious liberty, do you get the get-out-of-treason-jail-free card because you've hidden behind the skirts of the church? These are serious questions. Do you suppose it gives comfort to a state like Iran that torments homosexuals, or a state like Russia that torments homosexuals, or a state like Uganda that torments homosexuals? Do you think it gives them aid and comfort when Brian Fisher talks about wanting to deprive people of their essential rights because of how he perceives they have sex or love one another? That's what we're talking about here. Brian Fisher, as much as we might like to just make sport of him, and we do, God, we do, Brian Fisher is, for all intents and purposes, a Lord Haw-Haw of the homophobic global right wing. He is a propagandist for theocracies, which by definition are inimical to the United States of America as it is established within our Constitution. And what these so-called religious liberties bills are and do is to attempt to subvert constitutional government in favor of a religious theocracy. No, religious theocracy, that's kind of redundant, isn't it, Bob? Yes. So let's understand at its basic level that Brian Fisher is, with every word he speaks, essentially, and it matters not that he wraps himself in the flag and carries a Bible while doing so, while marching, he is essentially, quintessentially, un-American.
And Brewer will sign this thing, both of the senators, John McCain, Jeff Flake, they're out there telling her not to sign it. You get a lot of pressure from Big Gay not to sign this thing. But again, you know, it's an illustration of the larger fact, ladies and gentlemen, I've said before, we are going to have to choose between homosexuality and religious liberty because we cannot have both. Every advance of the homosexual agenda comes at the expense of religious liberty, and we're seeing that right now in Arizona. Either the homosexual agenda is going to be forced into retreat, or religious liberty is going to be forced into retreat, depending on whether Jan Brewer signs this bill or not. Now, we sent an action alert in. In fact, I did an interview this morning with a media outlet in Arizona, because the American Family Association, we sent an email alert to over 31,000 people in Arizona that are a part of our email network, urging them to contact Governor Jan Brewer and urge her to sign this thing for the simple reason that it protects Christians from discrimination.
Time out. Anybody at the IRS paying attention to this? Because this outfit is a 501c3 organization, and it's doing political lobbying. Anybody? I mean, just in case anybody's interested, there's a confession there.
Now, this bill is being talked about by Big Gay as if it enshrined discrimination, as if it was a bill that promoted discrimination. It does not do that. It doesn't promote discrimination. It doesn't cause discrimination.
No, because discrimination originates in the heart of the bigot. What it does is facilitate it. It ennobles it under color of law. Just as in the Deep South, Jim Crow laws enabled and ennobled and enshrined the personal racism of individuals. Because if you ever study anything, and many of you have, theories of racism, you find out there's individual racism, there is institutional racism, there is there's three kinds, one's individual, one's institutional, and the other is I don't know, cultural but when you have governmental structures that breathe life into individual biases and bigotries, then no, it can't be said to cause it directly. Rather, it is a matter of facilitation. And that's what Brian Fisher wants. Can you imagine? I mean, just take a minute. I noticed on a Facebook post on my Facebook page, one that Beth had put up. She said, down here in Texas, for all intents and purposes, we're living the Handmaid's Tale. Now, many of you know the Handmaid's Tale, the very famous dystopian future novel by Margaret Atwood, in which all of women's rights have been taken away and they're only fit for breeding and homemaking and basically second-class serf status. It's a terrifying book. People who think 1984 is creepy, I don't know. Maybe they've never sat down with The Handmaid's Tale. But do you ever stop to think about a world in which Brian Fisher and his filthy ilk get their way? It is nightmarish. Imagine a world in which Brian Fisher's small government forces could knock down your door at night to make sure you were having the right kind of sex. Imagine a totalitarian theocracy in which a charge of sexual impiety would be enough to have you taken to the public square and stoned to death. Gay people in this country have a right to be terrified of the Brian Fishers of the world. Anyway, contemplate that. Contemplate
Events discrimination by protecting the religious liberty of faith-driven businessmen in Arizona. So what lawmakers there are doing, they're trying to avoid what's happened in Oregon, what's happened in Washington, what's...
Now, hold on. If Brian Fisher is correct, then everything that we tried to do to correct the manifest wrongs of the Jim Crow South was incorrect. Because the vast majority of Jim Crow laws had, for very deliberate reasons, religious underpinnings, so that people could say, well, you know, we maintain colored water fountains because that's the way Jesus wants it. Right? Yeah. Segregation was preached from pulpits all across the South. To this day, there's a little church called Sam Black Church, about 60 miles from here. And it is Sam Black Church, Methodist Episcopal South. And that word South appears on the church in its designation to this day. And it's still a consecrated going concern in the religion business. It is Sam Black Methodist Episcopal Church South, because its greatest preacher was a man named Sam Black who rode circuit. He's a relative of mine, by the way. Rode circuit in the years prior to the Civil War, preaching white supremacy as he understood it being set forth via the inspiration of Almighty God in the Bible. Sam Black knew every slavery verse in the Bible and would preach hellfire and damnation on anyone who would talk about freeing slaves, abolition, eliminating slavery, because slavery by God, was an institution ordained by God, created by God, approved by God. And this is just that argument 150 years later, with a new class of individuals against whom it may be argued.
Happened in New Mexico and Colorado. Now, think about it for a minute. There isn't any question that homosexuality is a sin according to Christian teaching, and that marriage according to the Bible, according to...
Actually, there are questions. In fact, I think it was pointed out a couple of weeks ago that one of the verses that these freaks point to so frequently can arguably be said to be a mistranslation from the gutter Greek in which the New Testament was written. Remember, the Greek of the New Testament is the Greek of the barely literate. It's not the high-flown, high-blown grammar of Homer and Sophocles and... No. It's the difference between... the English of Pogo and the English of Shakespeare. And what they hammer on about is actually an admonition by Paul not to have sex with temple prostitutes, because temple prostitution was legal then, and it was a big revenue source for the pagan world. Yeah, really. But go on, Brian.
Christianity is exclusively a man-woman proposition. So a same-sex marriage...
Propositions? There are propositions involved?
It's counterfeit. And no wedding vendor should be compelled against his conscience and against Christian conviction to positively affirm something that the Scripture condemns.
Wedding vendor? Well, we had to have a little capitalism creep in there sometime or another now, didn't we? Wedding vendor. Okay. That means wedding salesman? I guess a wedding broker would be somebody who says, 4 bullocks, 12 ewes, a ram, and 3 camels, and for her. That's a wedding broker. A wedding vendor? That's a different animal.
And so what Big A wants to do in Arizona is they want the government to force Christians to commit a sin. I mean, that's how...
But wait a minute. Let's say for a moment that the government has the power to compel some Christians, not all Christians, even though he reserves the right to define which Christians are Christians and which ones aren't, because there are Christians who would not feel it sinful at all to do business with gay people. I would suggest they're a lot more likely to be the actual Christians, but I'm not going to play his game. But let's assume for a moment that the government does have the power to compel a Christian to commit sin. Are not these fundamentalist freaks part of a religion that says Jesus forgives everything?
I mean, the only way you could be really well and truly screwed by committing the sin of delivering flowers to a gay wedding is if on the way home, after delivering the flowers to the gay wedding, on the way home in your florist van, you get hit by a train at a crossing and you get killed before you can ask Jesus to forgive you for delivering the goddamn flowers to the wedding. Because Jesus forgives everything. The only way you... And then, you know, I got to think that that's just a little bit of pissant time in purgatory, you know, dying unshriven of delivering flowers to a gay wedding. I don't know what religion this guy actually adheres to. Yes, I do. Capitalism. But it ain't the religion of the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi. Our buddy Steve, with a note, says, I must speak up. I'm a Catholic and follower of the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer. Guess what? He never once said anything about GLBT people, sex, or anything. Contrary to what many non-Catholics think, on matters of morals, it is up to the person's individual conscience on how to act. That is completely consistent with church teaching. Most importantly, I am sick and damn tired of Christianists like this Brian Fisher fellow purporting to speak for Christians about what are Christian values. My Christian faith requires me to consider this man my brother, ever. But Christian faith also requires me to admonish him when he is wrong. Also, and he is wrong here, most importantly, as I have written, he no more speaks for Christians than I speak for West Virginians. Somehow I'm bothered by that analogy. I'll probably figure it out at 3 o'clock this morning. I am even more sick and tired of hearing him... I think you're a little worked up, Steve. I am even more sick and tired of hearing for isms about what gay people do or think. He certainly does not speak for GLBT people. He speaks for himself and only himself on matters of what is Christian. He has nothing to say on what gay people think. Amen to that. But understand, Steve, he does speak for the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, a 501c3 operation which cannot even be bothered to obey the laws of the United States. And they don't obey the laws of the United States because they are engaged in treason. Robert in Australia writing, sorry, Bob, when you said big gay, my mind filled in the Al, the South Park character. Question. How do you run a business along Christian principles? See, that's at the essence of this. Christian business is like what? Liquid ice. Fat-free lard. Clean coal. Christian business. The last thing in the world that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and an itinerant semi-literate rabbi, was about was business. By the way, Ron and Raleigh pointing out, Bob, we can call him Racist Bannon. That's good. Irish Dave asking, wedding vendors, are they similar to money changers? I would say they are not only similar, they were probably identical. Ron and Raleigh, Bob, invoking the IRS is as useless as invoking the DOJ, Antitrust Division. The IRS wouldn't revoke tax exempt if a preacher stood in the pulpit and directed his congregation to vote a straight Republican ticket. No, they won't, and look. That's the direct refutation of the IRS scandal. IRS, we're being persecuted because we're Christians. Shut up. I mean, not you, Ron. Jack in Shreveport.
I'd say that any bill or any other matter that specifies a particular religion could not promote religious liberty. Ding, 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 ding. Kate with a follow-up. She says, several of the Arizona Republicans have recanted, sorry that they were swayed by the Tea Party thugs. Heard an interesting interview on CBC last night. They're encouraging Crazy Jan to not sign the bill. Oh, yeah. After saying, pass it, pass it, pass it, pass it, pass it, pass it, pass it. Now that they've realized that they're doing the bit. What they're trying to do is they're trying to butter both sides of the bread. See, we passed the bill that you teabaggers wanted, but y'all ain't got any money. Y'all ain't got any millions of dollars to support our campaigns. And by God, businesses do. And we gotta create jobs, right? And jobs. I'm afraid that Brian Fisher is wearing Kate just a little bit thin. She says, I'm about to puke here. I can't hang on much longer. Eyes rolling. I hope this guy goes to heaven when he dies. Dot, dot, dot. Tonight! Yeah, no kidding. We'll be done with this fairly quickly. Let's see if we can just let him roll out.
Committed they are to the agenda of Big Gay, they are prepared to use the tyrannical force of government to force Christians to commit a sin, to force Christians to violate their own consciences. Now remember, First Amendment of the Constitution protects the free exercise of religion.
And that's an open question, and I guess it'll have to be decided at some point. What constitutes the exercise of religion? I would say that a rational interpretation of the free exercise of religion means that you can go to any church you want to go to or no church at all, or that in the privacy of your home you may worship as you see fit. You may worship as you see fit with a group of like-minded people in a church, but you do not get to demand that the entire governmental workings of a country that guarantees everybody else religious freedom too, you cannot demand that the government bow to your own weird, twisted, sick whims. But I'm guessing here. Let's continue.
Now, exercise means exactly that. It means you get to exercise your religion.
Jumping jacks for Jesus.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can bring your Christian values into your business. You can run your business according to your religious principles.
If you can find any.
Because the Constitution guarantees you the free exercise of religion. So we've got the guarantee for the free exercise of religion, but you can read the Constitution front to back, sideways. You will find no mention anywhere in the Constitution of the right to engage in sodomy.
Did he say sodomy? Neither will you find any reference in the Constitution to not engaging in sodomy. Because it was left unremarked upon. Because it was not thought to be a proper function of government to rule according to those lines. There's no Federalist paper on sexuality. Now, I'll double-check that with Dr. Bill, but I'm almost certain that there is not. There is also no Federalist paper on how to best get your whites white and keep your colors bright. In fact, there's not even a Federalist paper on the proper mixing ratio for really good gunpowder. There's all kinds of stuff, kind of like with what all the things that Jesus said, too. There's all kinds of stuff that goes unremarked upon because it was either beneath or beyond the scope of the consideration. I mean, jumping Jesus Christ. George Washington was the president of the Constitutional Convention. Can you hear the... Oh, if only we had a staff. We go now to the Royal Horn Dramatic Arts Theater. Crowd noise in the background and the hammer going, gentlemen, gentlemen, gentlemen! Order, please! We will now move to consideration of which ways in which of the various positions in which people can have sex. Yes, Mr. Madison. Mr. President, will this take into account only upstanding, God-fearing Christian sex, or will these rules also to apply to when old Marsh decides to go down and rape one of his slaves? See? Yeah.
So the constitutionally explicit right to religious liberty, that trumps a right that's not even in the Constitution and cannot be a right, the right to engage in sodomy. You may have the privilege to do it, but nobody has a moral, and nobody should have a legal right to do something which is wrong.
Which is wrong. By the way, I want to point something out to you. And I suppose some of this is just a matter of personal preference as opposed to being born that way. I don't operate with a script. I just don't. I think about the program all day long, and stuff compiles in my head, but it's constantly changing. And so when we finally get to the point where we're doing the program, everything is literally, no, it's not literally off the cuff. Everything is figuratively off the cuff. You're hearing the audio from this. I happen to be watching the video. One of these days we'll be able to show this stuff to you. I think that would be kind of fun. But everything this goober says is scripted. And he's reading it all. Because he has attempted to carefully craft his argument. But you know what this reminds me of more than anything else? Go and read the circular reasoning of the early Christian fathers. God is great because he sent Jesus to save us, because other gods aren't real because God is great. I mean, you'll find that kind of phony baloney bullshit reasoning. And this is the same thing. Fisher is actually practicing a brand of theocracy that has had a certain toehold, foothold, handhold, and sometimes just straight up mat slam grasp on the church for 2,000 years. I'm right because you're a heathen. Really. One of their chief arguments. Anyway.
Law, Arizona's the same. They've got a law that protects discrimination on the basis of religion. You can't discriminate against somebody according to state law on the basis of religion. Well, that means that these Christian businessmen ought to be protected already.
No, it doesn't. It means that no one can deny them services based upon their religion. No one can deny them accommodations. For instance, let's say you've got a homophobic bakery and they want to open up a bakery and they say, we want to rent this space for Homophobic Bakery LLC. No, let's make it a little clearer. We want to rent this building and open up Homophobic Baptist Bakery LLC. Well, the law says you cannot discriminate against them because they're Baptists. That's what that means. It does not mean that they have a right, because what he, we're arguing, this is an economic argument, not a religious one, no matter how hard this freak tries. What he is arguing, in essence, is that because they are bigots, because they are homophobes, and because they are bigots and homophobes for a purportedly religious reason, that they therefore have an absolute right not to have their ability to profit impinged upon. See the distinction? These guys think that because they are religious fundamentalists, that God has granted them a license to print money. That is how sick and how twisted and how wrong and how idiotic and how greed and avarice infused their theology is.
They can't be discriminated against on the basis of their religion. If they have religious values that inform the way they run their business, they cannot be discriminated against by the state or anybody else. And remember what the scripture says. You know, people ask, well, what about this? What about Christians? There's nothing.
Oh, boy, we're going to get into some critical interpretation of scripture. This will be fun.
In the Bible that prohibits Christians from baking a cake for a Christian wedding. Now, it may not be that explicit, but listen to what the Bible does say. This is very straightforward. This is very unambiguous.
And it's plenty ambiguous because, for starters, he's not going to tell us what translation he's using, which means that this could mean anything. Remember, temple prostitutes.
Ephesians 5:11. Listen to this.
Okay. Anybody want to go check? There's a book out there by Bart Ehrman, and we've talked about it. Dr. Ehrman was on this program many, 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 many years ago. Is Ephesians one of the books that was actually written by Paul, or is it one of the books that was written in Paul's name? I think the name of the book was Forged. Let's see. Let's just look real quick. It goes 2011 story. Forged, Writing in the Name of God, Why the Bible's Authors Are Not Who We Think They Are, by Bart Ehrman. Yeah, there it is. Individuals claiming to be Paul wrote 1st and 2nd Timothy, Titus, 2nd Thessalonians, Ephesians, and Colossians. So this guy is about to attribute to the guy who invented Christianity words from Ephesians. Remember, because this guy's a fundamentalist, by definition it means he's a liar, and he is going to quote a forged text to support his specious argument.
Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. Now, what part of take no part do people not understand?
The part where you think it was written by Paul, you dick.
Those are three words, each of them one syllable, easy to understand. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness.
Okay, now we're going to need somebody to define unfruitful works of darkness, but I'm guessing that's past you, Brian.
Don't participate in them. Don't be a part of that. Don't enable that. Don't contribute to that. Don't endorse that. Don't promote that. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. So that's what you got in Arizona.
So Brian Fisher wants Christians to expose themselves? Huh?
Big gays out there trying to force Christian businessmen to violate their consciences and realize if big... If homosexual activists actually believed in tolerance, what they would do is they would respect the convictions of Christian businessmen.
Oh, I respect the convictions of Christian businessmen, preferably 5 to 15 years.
they would say, hey, I respect your convictions. I'll be happy to go find another vendor to take care of what I want. And
but see, that's not what this law is about. It's not about going and finding somebody else. It's about the rights of these fundamentalist goons to refuse services. See, this guy's a Christian, therefore everything he says is a lie.
In every single case, every one of these homosexual couples, whether it's in Oregon, whether it's in Washington, whether it's in Colorado, whether it's in Arizona, whether it's in New Mexico, every single one of these homosexual couples has found another vendor who is happy to photograph their weddings or make their flower arrangements or bake a cake for their reception. They had no problem getting what they wanted, but the reality is they don't believe in tolerance at all. In fact, I think they are jackbooted homo-fascist thugs.
We had to wait a little while to get there, but, you know, necessary. Yeah, jackbooted? There you go. Godwin's Law. Oopsie. Right. Jack in Shreveport says, I'm so sick of the right wing using the phrase forced to in place of obeying the laws of. Anything they don't like has been rammed down their throats rather than voted on. What a bunch of whiners. Yes, Irish Dave, in point of fact, yes. Paul of Tarsus had a Holy Ghost writer. Yep. So, ugh. At least we can see the nature of the treason these people are committing. And we understand, of course, that no one will ever charge them with it, though they should be. I mean, if you're giving aid and comfort to the mullahs of Iran, well, what more does one need, really? Good news. Thank you very much, Waggy. Waggy just completed Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge and completed fundraising. Got us out of the hole. And thank you to Sal for jumping in with Waggy. So thank you all very much for helping us reach the evening's fundraising goal. It means a very great deal. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Tracy.
So am I a jackbooted thug because I'm gay?
Yes, you are. No, you're a jackbooted homo-fascist thug.
Oh, I'm sorry. Homo-fascist.
Yeah, little pink swastika, you know.
All right, okay. Well, I guess now I just got an email from saying now they're trying that mess in Georgia, too.
Yes, they are.
I'm going, okay, really? Really? So my question is, you know, like you said, that bakery in Oregon that refused service to the gay couple because of their religious values, and then you say they had some reporters go there and order, you know, happy divorce cake and all sorts of other cakes.
Yeah, exactly.
And they happily made...
They happily made a Satanist cake.
A Satanist cake?
Yes.
Okay. So you rather make a cake for worshiping Satan than, you know... Well, here's my other question. Okay, so... Say that we go, you know, that if a heterosexual couple go to a bed and breakfast, and they're not married. Do they have to fill out a questionnaire as to whether they're married? Before they check in, do they have to show proof?
No, because they are presumptively heterosexual.
Oh. Okay. Because I'm just wondering, because I have some friends that are transgender that are gorgeous, and I'm like, you'd have a hard time trying to figure out whether, you know, so then what?
I know. It becomes a real challenge after a while.
You know, it just never ceases to amaze me how, you know, people have, in, you know, no other way of saying it, lost ever loving mind. They have just gone dark, raving mad.
That's an easy assertion, Tracy, but I think there's so much more that underlies all of this.
Oh, besides the hate and bigotry?
Also because of the absence of faith in their own faith structure.
There's no faith. You can't, again.
They don't believe in their own God.
No, they don't. They can't. Simple. How can you love me, who you've never seen, and hate your brother, who you see every day? So, you know, and that's Jesus.
But you know, Tracy, I am of two minds on this whole issue, because on the one hand, I want Governor Hatchetface to sign this bill into law.
Oh, that Jan Brewer?
Yeah. I want her to sign this into law, and I want it to go all the way to the Supreme Court, and I want to, and that's a dicey proposition, I understand.
Dicey.
But I don't think even Anthony Kennedy and dead-eyed John Roberts are gonna sit still for this.
Even them. They keep their voice like, dude, seriously?
Really, seriously. Because that could put paid to a lot of this in a real hurry. And frankly, I want the right wing in Arizona to pay a terrible price for this.
Terrible.
And I also want, at some point, the final nail driven in the right wing fundamentalist coffin. I mean, I want a wooden stake that's been greased up in garlic oil, driven through them all the way through the back of the casket.
No, Bob, don't hold back. Tell me how you really feel.
On the other hand, I also recognize economic realities. Because when the NFL is saying, you know, we're kind of monitoring this, and, well, we're probably going to have our first openly gay NFL player next season. And by the way, the Super Bowl is scheduled to be in Phoenix next year.
Oh, yeah, really? Okay.
And that's about $55 million or something to the Phoenix economy. At the end of the day, whatever scruples, and we've already seen it manifested by Jeff Flake. Now, understand, Jeff Flake is a member of the United States Senate. He's the junior senator from Arizona, and this guy is just nuts. I mean, he's been teabagging absolutely crazy for years. But this is a crazy too far for him. And some of the most cynical politics you could ever hope to see. These right-wing teabaggers like, what's his name, Steve Pearce in Arizona, who said, well, I voted for it, but I now regret my vote because I understand what it really means. Bull. Bull.
Yeah. You didn't understand. You started seeing those dollar signs going away.
Right.
That's what you knew what it meant.
And at the end of the day, we can talk Jesus all day long, but at the end of the day, the shrine he goes and prays in front of, and most of these teabagging Republicans, and frankly, most of these fundamentalist Christians, they don't pray in the temple of God. They pray in the temple of Mammon.
Exactly. And like you said, when those dollars stop coming in, because, it was bad enough back when they could discriminate against somebody that looked like me because of my skin, okay? So, I mean, I'm black. Nothing you can do about that. You can say, okay, she's black, so I'm not going to serve her. But there's no way of you knowing whether or not I'm gay. Just because, if two women are traveling together, they're automatically gay. You know, it's just because two men are traveling together. I mean, is there going to be a litmus test? Okay, if you swish just a little bit too hard, or your wrist isn't quite, you know, strong enough or whatever, then automatically that gives you that. They are opening up a can of worms that will never be able to be closed again.
And see, at this point, I think the bill's going to be vetoed.
Yeah, because even Jan Brewer's not that crazy.
Well, no, for the economic mentions, economic reasons aforementioned. See, it's kind of ironic that last night I mentioned. No, well, interesting at least. Last night I made mention of the fact that no, it was yesterday. Well, maybe it was when I was talking to Dr. Bill, but Apple. Remember, Steve Jobs used to talk about how much he despised the American worker.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so Apple had to be dragged kicking and screaming to build some sort of a plant in the United States. Well, lo and behold, it turns out that they got tired of doing business with Corning for their so-called Gorilla Glass on their phones and tablets.
Okay.
All right. So they invested in their own company that was going to manufacture a glass that's called Sapphire.
Uh-huh.
Well, everything's already in process and in progress, and they are trying to ramp up production of their Sapphire glass factory to make the glass for the new iPhone 6, which is supposedly going to roll out either late summer or early fall.
Oh, really?
Guess where the Sapphire glass factory is?
Let me guess, Arizona?
Bingo, you win. And so Apple picked up the phone, and I guess even Jan Brewer answers the phone when Apple calls, and they said, Governor Brewer, we just want to let you know that if you sign that bill into law, it's going to have a big negative impact on our little old Sapphire glass factory there in your state.
How about that, baby?
I mean, this is the legal American business version of, hey, mighty nice glass factory you got there, lady. Be a shame if something happened to it, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, see, if that plant opens in that state and they start manufacturing glass that goes into iPhones and people who don't hate people for how they love start writing to Apple and saying, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to get me a Samsung S5 instead of a homophobic iPhone. Apple is not going to be happy.
No, sir. I know quite a few gay people who not only use Apple products, but work for Apple. So, yeah, you know how I try to not get myself worked up?
I know, and it's my fault that I do get you that. No, yes.
No, it's okay.
I'm a bad person, I know.
You know, it's quite all right, but it's troubling, to say the least. When you turn on, every day I turn on the news, on notification, but I do turn on the news because there's only so much Prozac I can take. And so I watch the news, and then I hear about, you know, what's going on in Arizona, and then I get the email about Georgia, and I'm like, really, guys? Do you get that?
Yeah, Super Bowl, we won't be going back to Atlanta anytime soon.
Uh-uh.
And let's say Georgia gets it through. What happens the first time somebody hangs a we reserve the right not to serve the homos sign on, say, the Popeyes at Hartsfield?
Yeah.
And it and people begin to note that Hartsfield International is a homophobic airport.
Yeah.
You know how much traffic goes in and out of Hartsfield every day?
Yeah, because I've been in that airport, and it's frightening, to say the least.
Oh, now, I love that airport. Come on.
It's frightening for the size. I mean, as far as airports are goals, as far as the efficiency of that airport, it makes my airport look like, you know, they should be running, you know, like Barney and Rubble and Fred Flintstone are running it because of how historic it is. But yeah, no.
The business in Arizona is getting serious. Marriott Corporation. And understand that Marriott is run by a Marriott's run by a bunch of religious fundamentalists. I think they might even be Mormons.
Oh, and even they're saying. Yeah.
And they're saying, Jan, honey, sister, wife, veto this bill, because nobody's going to come stay in our hotels.
Pump the brakes, boo.
And then there's Intel. you know, Intel Inside and all of that, you know, chip maker.
Pardon
us, Governor Brewer. Would you mind vetoing this?
Are they in Arizona, too?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like you said.
American Airlines, Governor Brewer. Nobody's going to want to fly into Phoenix. I mean, Brian Fisher can't buy that many tickets.
Nope.
And you know the teabaggers don't travel anyway.
No.
Except in, you know, big caravans of rattling, wobbling RVs and whatnot. Well, I mean, every now and then, Americans for Prosperity will rent them a bus and take them to D.C. and give them some donuts and Kool-Aid. But apart from that, no, not so much.
Not so much. You know, because, you know, what I laugh about all these laws, that, you know, to protect everybody from us gay folks. But, I mean, okay, first of all, for the first time in my life, you know, I'm in a dual-income family. And, I mean, we're not doing, you know, exceptional, but I'm doing a hell of a lot better than I was by myself. And I can think about all my gay friends at church. And we're talking, you know, a couple of PhDs that are married to another PhD or a doctor and a couple of lawyers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, the tax base for gay people are pretty much, you know, they have money. And like, you know, I'm just thinking about Sedona. All those nice, beautiful spas and all that. You know, I won't go. I mean, I'm already not going to South. I said I'll never go back to Florida. And I love Disney World. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Not good. I would not step foot in a state where my son could just be walking down the street and be shot down just because he looks dangerous. Sorry, no. So
yeah.
Until they get rid of those cowboys at that state, I'll never go back. As a matter of fact, if I ever need to do a connecting flight to go to, again, I'm supposed to be going to Brazil for my 50th birthday for the Summer Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make sure that my flight is even connecting Florida if I have to. I will pay extra money not to even.
Yeah, you could probably connect out of George H.W. Bush International in Houston, maybe Dallas.
Okay, that just makes my life. You know, these are my choices.
Well, no. There's no way you. Well, then there's. If Atlanta passes, it's. Yeah.
But see, then again, like you said, if it goes through, that's a whole lot of money. Because, see, that means I'm going to. Hundreds of millions of people who will say, you know what? I won't do that layover in Georgia. I won't do that layover in Florida. I won't go to Disney World. I won't do this. I won't go to Evergreen. I won't go to the Grand Canyon. You know?
Yeah.
It's just that simple. See, it's like when I had the guy in my cab that made the joke about lynching, and he tried to, you know, laugh it off or what have you, and I told him, I said, you know, you think you're funny and you think, oh, it's no big deal. But I said, you're lucky that I don't know your name and who you work for. Because I knew they were, you know, a bunch of insurance at, you know, some big highfalutin company. I said, because the only thing, as soon as the dawn broke tomorrow morning, I would be on the phone calling your corporate office and telling them what kind of person that they have representing their company. And see how funny it is then.
Yeah, that's like that story we talked about on the program last night out of the University of Mississippi, Stan, about those three fun-loving freshmen who decided to put the Confederate flag portion of the old Georgia flag over the face of James Meredith and string a noose around his neck on the statue of James Meredith, the first black man to graduate from Ole Miss.
Oh, but that was just a joke, right? We didn't mean nothing by it.
At least the university and the national fraternity took immediate action. Sigma Phi Epsilon was the fraternity in question. They immediately suspended the charter of the fraternity because Sigma Phi Epsilon, back in, I think, 1956 or 1959, was the first men's social fraternity to unequivocally state that they would not engage in in discrimination based upon race or ethnicity.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, they took it pretty seriously. But, the problem lies in the fact that, in a fraternity situation, this stuff rolls downhill. These were freshmen. They were probably either pledges or newly initiated brothers, which meant that they were acting on some sort of a challenge or prank or task assigned to them by the upperclassmen in their chapter.
Because I just can't imagine that freshmen let's go do this. No.
Yeah, let's get drunked up and put a noose on the statue of James Meredith. That'll be a real knee slapper.
With the Confederate flag.
Right, and they were, of course, young men from the state of Georgia.
Oh. Yeah. Bob, as much as I love it down in your neck of the woods because it's so damn beautiful, I don't know. I don't know.
Hey, why do you think I always enjoy it so much when I get to go out and see the wider world?
I think about, when I went down there, I was in Georgia and North Carolina and South Carolina, and I was, in a hotel with my girl, and not that long ago, I wouldn't have been able to sleep in that hotel.
Mm-mm. No, Ferg and I sat down the other night and watched 42.
Oh, the movie that was what prompted the guy to make a joke about lynching.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, no, he said.
Well, at least for, I mean, because at one time, and this is a mark of progress, not lack of knowledge. When they started showing the doors and the marked colored and. Ferg looked at me and said, "That really was that way, Dad? They're not overplaying this?" I said, "No, they're actually underplaying it, son."
Underplaying it.
And the guy who played the Philadelphia Phillies manager, who was out there screaming and he said, "Dad, this is beginning to bother me." And I said, "Son, this is mild by comparison."
You guys haven't seen 12 Years a Slave yet, have you?
No. Well, we're working up to that.
Okay. Yeah, because you're going to have to be...
No, there's going to be a lot of teachable moments.
There's going to be a whole lot of teachable moments. And just the mere fact that, another thing, just because he was black, he... No, right. I mean, the man was kidnapped. Kidnapped and sold as a slave.
Straight up, yeah. Oh, and by the way, the fact that I've not gotten around to watching a few other movies has largely to do with the fact that I've been marching through Justified at your, at your insistence.
And are you loving every minute of it?
I finally got to the part you were talking about, and it was deeply disturbing. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see that people who oppose mountaintop removal are portrayed as sort of mercenary hillbillies who will sell out their own neighbors for a nickel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was charming. But by the way, the guy who plays Raylan's boss?
Yes.
It turns out he's a real hardcore wingnut.
Oh.
Yeah, and I mean, I think he's on Twitter, he's like the real Nick Searcy. And he posts, some disgusting stuff on his Twitter feed.
Maybe that's why he's not going to be on the show for too much longer.
He said he'd just been signed on to another season and another season.
Huh. Well, because they talk about that he's supposed to be retiring on the show, so who knows.
This is it. It was on February 18th. It was a post entitled, "Justified actor Nick Searcy asked us not to call him a teabagger, ultracon, or bigot" in this headline. Let's see. Here's some Nick Searcy tweets. "This weekend was rough. I think I took on the entire juvenile international atheist club one shit eater at a time."
Oh.
Let's see. "Oh, well, I've got the goddamned world ass-kissing 20-something atheist butt-buddy convention to worry about."
Oh.
Let's see. Another one. What true gutless anonymous atheist pussy acts this way? Oh, that's right. All of them. Let's see. I always listen when a shit-eating segment in the Human Anonymous Atheist Centipede comments on my eating habits. I am on television and immensely Googleable, you ignorant asshole. Now, who the fuck are you, anonymous internet pussy?
Oh, my God. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. I try really see. Well, ow.
So this guy is a sexist, apparently a misogynist, some sort of weirdo fundamentalist, apparently a theocrat. Let's see. Here's another one of his tweets. Wow, that sounds so profound. I'll bet a fat chick would really swoon if you said something like that to her.
Wow. I'm sorry. I'm trying.
Somebody tweeted at him and said, just stopping by to ask if you could quit ruining Justified, and he said, I can't because the audience, writers, and critics all love me, and they send me big fucking checks. Don't you love these Christians?
So he's still on the show. Well, why am I surprised? I mean, we had the Duck Dynasty guy. So, you know, like you said, it's all about the money.
Yeah, I think this guy's trying to capitalize on the whole Duck Dynasty thing.
It's like, look, if they don't find the Duck Dynasty guys, why would they worry? You know. Oh, you know, I have a cute story. You know how you get the people who are always screaming about how horrible Obamacare is and all that. So the other day I posted on my, I don't know why people mess with me on my Facebook page. I don't mess with anybody. But anyway, so I posted on Facebook about how, you know, still there are still some states that are refusing to allow Obamacare, yeah? And so one of my, you know, Facebook acquaintances railed, went off. Well, you know, Obamacare is crap and, you know, I'm paying more money than this and that and this and that, and my friends are, you know, losing their job, cutting their hours and all this. And so I wrote back, and I'm like, gee, I'm really sorry that you're going through all this because, you know, I'm doing, because of Obamacare, I'm being able to get the skin treatments that I need, and my son has medical insurance for the first time, and wada, 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 wada. And I said, well, here's, tell you what. I have a friend that works at Cover California. She's amazing. If there's any problems that you're having, here's her number. Give her a call. You think I got a response?
I'm guessing no.
No. And then it's when she was talking about the, you know, how the employers are cutting her friend's hours. I said, well, you know what? You can't blame Obamacare for stuff that's always happened. I said, these people are just using Obamacare as an excuse to screw their employees over. And I think you should all stay out of, if they've been having all these 40 hours a week up until then you might want, they might want to call the labor board. Again.
Right. Yeah, again. No. Oh, by the way, you're getting a suggestion in via email. Marty says, I would advise Tracy to go to London for the 16 Summer Games.
To where?
London for the 16 Summer Games.
London, it was already in London. What was it, 2012?
Yeah. Wait a minute. Yeah. What?
I'm going to Brazil for the 2016 game, hopefully.
Yeah, I'm not fully understanding what Marty was getting at there all of a sudden.
No, I'm like, wait, what? Yeah, like I said, I just, you know, when people, I love it when people go off about something just so, and expect for me not to say anything. It's like, if you're going to go off on me, you better be ready for me to return the favor. I mean, she didn't actually go off on me. She just was, you know, going on and on about Obamacare. And, you know, basically I said, well, seriously, though, if you're having any issues, please call her.
Right.
Yes, there's some glitches. Yeah. And then when people get mad, I said, well, do you think Medicare rolled out, you know, hung diggity great on the first time it rolled out? And, hell, that was back when there weren't any computers or anything. People actually had to do shit with by hand. Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of Obamacare, how's it working for you?
Still ain't.
Why? What's happening?
Well, I mean, I'm apparently too rich for the Medicaid expansion and too poor to be able to afford the Obamacare.
Where am I getting?
Yeah, $600 a month for something like a $10,000 deductible.
I mean, I'm not laughing. I'm just like, what?
No, I laugh too. But, you know, part of that is because the only, we've got one company offering policies in West Virginia. Blue Cross Blue Shield. Nobody else is participating. So, you know, out in the cold.
So that's what it is. And if you guys have more choices, like if you lived in a state where, you know, like I do, you might have actual, you know.
Yeah, there's something to choose from. Right.
Okay. Well, is your state one of those states where the governor is refusing help with Obamacare, or?
No. We've got the Medicaid expansion, and we've got, you know, the marketplace, and it just doesn't work.
It's just that there's no market in the marketplace.
There are 7 or 8 plans to choose from, and they range from $1,100 a month down to $600 and change.
No. Wow.
Yeah.
That, wow. I try.
Oh, I'm not giving up. I'm going to go back and keep trying, but.
Well, you know what? If I, because I don't know if she has any idea what she could do in other states, but I bet you if I emailed her, I could probably get some information about other states, and if I can't, you know, and I'll send her an email today. Or, yeah, because I just, people, we just, everybody deserves the right to decent health care. That's another one of my problems.
Well, the problem is, if that was actually factual, Tracy, we would have universal single-payer Medicare for all.
Oh, yeah, well.
Because it's ridiculous. It's something like, 2,000 or 3,000 worth of out-of-pocket expenses before the coverage kicks in.
No. See, like, okay, for example, out here, it's cleared up, but I was having issues with psoriasis. And basically with the insurance that I had, you could only do so much. If you know anybody with psoriasis, it's a clusterfuck. Because it's really nothing you could do about it. Really. And so now because of Obamacare, I could get light treatments for my skin. And so my out-of-pocket for my deduction is $150.
Wow. I can only marvel.
$150. And I've already made that deductible for this year. So, yeah. See, that's, like you said, it should just be universal. What I pay here, I mean, you should be paying less because of the fact that, you know, we have a higher cost of living in California.
Oh, you've got a higher cost of living, but you've got you've also got a much younger average populace, and you've got a much less toxic environment in which to live. Our cancer rates in West Virginia are dramatically higher than yours. Our heart disease rates are higher than yours. Our diabetes rates are higher than yours. I mean, it's the, the It's sad.
It is sad. It's beyond ridiculous.
And just because I'm having a hard time with it doesn't mean that it isn't working. There are lots more people who are now signed up on the Medicaid expansion, despite the fact that the Governor Earl Ray Tomlin GERT administration is doing almost ebbing to encourage people to enroll.
And see, that's it. You know, like, you can't drive down the street in L.A. now without seeing Cover California on the buses, Covers California on the billboard. You just, you know, in every commercial cycle, there's at least one commercial about Cover California on TV, on the radio. I mean, you would have to, I don't know how you wouldn't be able to know about Cover California if you lived in L.A., because they're not playing out here. And like you know,
they're trying to make it work, because when you consider what the federal dollar outlay is for expanded Medicaid in a state like California, good God, it's bigger than just, I would imagine, that the outlay of funds for Medicaid expansion in California is larger than the entire economies of some states.
Probably.
So this is going to be a tremendous engine of economic growth.
Yes, it is. I have a friend, again, who, you know, how did I wind up with all these gay friends that are Republican? Okay, it's amazing. But
that's explained by a quick trip up to Wisconsin, where a dear friend of mine says, you know, some of these farmers out here have accumulated enough money now that they think they're almost Republicans. You know, if you feel like you're probably welcome in the circle of swells where everybody calls each other babe, well, maybe, you know,
right.
even though Republicans despise gay people, you know, if you got enough money, maybe you're Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Because Republican versus Democrat has, at its essence, forevermore, been defined by economic status.
Yep.
I mean, consider that my current retiring senator, Jay Rockefeller, is a Democrat, and he's a Rockefeller, you know, direct descendant of, but his uncle Nelson was one of the last so-called liberal Republicans as governor of New York and vice president under Gerald Ford. So there are certain stereotypes that that come pretty close to fitting. Jay Rockefeller happened to turn into a Democrat because he came to West Virginia when he was a very young man as a VISTA volunteer. You know, you remember what VISTA was?
No.
Volunteers in Service to America. Kind of like the Peace Corps for poverty-stricken parts of the United States.
Okay.
And he got assigned to Lincoln County, West Virginia, and got his life changed for him. And so because he was privileged and because he was a Rockefeller and had access to power, he actually tried to do things that would be good for the working poor of West Virginia. And he ran for governor the first time, and among other things, he had seen the horrors of strip mining, and he ran for governor opposed to strip mining. And he got beat like he owed people money.
He got beat.
And so from there on out, and it's a political story that's been repeated time after time after time, George Wallace, the first time he ran for governor of Alabama, ran as a moderate. And didn't fill his speeches with venomous invective against people of color. And he got beat like he owed people money. And he said, I will never be out N-worded again. And then transformed into the George Wallace that we know and hate from history. Well, sort of the same thing happened with Jay Rockefeller. He dared stand up to the coal companies, got his ass handed to him. And then he ran again as a pro-coal Democrat and won two terms in the governor's office, then ran for Senate and stayed in the Senate. And even now, as he retires, he still will not say a word about the health implications for people who happen to live near mountaintop removal. He talks a lot about miners' health and safety, mine health and safety, He talks generally on a national level about access to health care for all of America. But to get him to talk about cancer clusters in mountaintop removal communities, well, they don't exist.
That's not going
to
happen.
I mean, we got another brand new study out from a bunch of scientists who talk about the particulate, the ultrafine particulates in the air around mountaintop removal sites, stuff that contributes probably to elevated rates of disease. And Governor Earl Ray Tomlin hasn't mentioned it. Jay Rockefeller hasn't mentioned it. Nick Rahal hasn't mentioned it. David McKinley hasn't mentioned it. God knows Joe Manchin hasn't mentioned it. Shelley Moore Capito hasn't mentioned it. And our Secretary of State, Natalie Kennett, who wants to be the Democratic replacement for Jay Rockefeller, running against Shelley Moore, hasn't mentioned it.
Now, and still, nothing about what's going on with the water. No.
Oh, there. I mean, there's some lip service, but there's nothing really happening. There's nothing really happening that that means much of anything. There's a lot of harumphing going on.
Harumph, harumph, harumph.
Yeah, we got to protect our phony baloney jobs. I didn't get a harumph out of that guy. Harumph. Yeah.
Well, it's like I said, when somebody asked me the other day, you know, oh, so there was another spill. I said, no. Well, there has been other, you know, things going on. But what I was talking about is the same thing that happened 2 months ago, and still the water is poisoned, and still nothing is.
Oh, yeah. It turns out that the GERD administration covered up. I mentioned this a couple of nights ago toward the very end of the program. The GERD administration tried to cover up the fact that there's still detectable methyl chlorohexane methanol in water at school buildings.
Is that what you were tweeting about? You know, have the kids, tell the kids to stay away from, nothing about the kids staying away from it. Is that what you were talking about?
Yeah, that was that article.
That's fucking amazing. Before I turned on the show, I was just kind of, you know, just thinking about this country and this world in general. And how what has happened to this world in the name of commerce and capitalism. And I think about when the Indians were here by themselves before, you know, the pale faces came along, and how they had, when they killed the buffalo, they used the whole buffalo. And they took care of, it was a sack, all this stuff that, you know, about. But, and then the white man came, okay, we only need this part of the buffalo, so the rest of the carcass could just go, you know, lie the way. And I think, Jesus Christ, this has been going on since the beginning of this country, but now it's just gotten to the point where, okay, well, yeah, you're going to make money, but then there's not going to be much of an earth left after you finish.
Well, see, yeah. People in West Virginia government, like Gert, keep saying things like, well, because had a meeting with EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy not too long back, at which he sat down and said, well, thank you for helping us with our poison spill, but I got to tell you, we got some problems with you EPA people. And we need to help you solve the coal problem so we can balance environmental needs against economic opportunity. And the first thing that occurred to my mind was, how difficult is it for Gert to understand that corpses don't have economic opportunities?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we had this conversation before. You know, even Henry Ford, as like you said, odious of a person he was, he got it. It's like, okay, well, I would, you know, there's no point in me trying to, you know, outprice my employees so they can't afford this, because I want to make money. I want my employees to be able to afford what I'm selling.
Yeah.
They can't afford it if I'm not paying them. But then you have people, you know, the unions, and I mean, when I left Ralph, I was a journeyman cashier when I left in 1990. Bob, I was making $15 an hour, if not more, something around there, okay? And that was in 1990. What year is this?
Yeah, I know.
2014.
Yeah.
So 24 years later, 24, where the prices of everything has gone up, okay? And people are still making $7 an hour? Really? And you're all of it.
Because the economy will collapse if they make 10.
10? Really?
Y'all just, you know, just ask the Chamber of Commerce and the Koch brothers and Americans for Prosperity and, you know, the rest of those money-grubbing pigs.
Well, it's, you know, because I was just thinking, now when I had Alex, I was in 1988, okay? So at that point, I was probably at maybe $12. Okay, and you know how much the rent was for a one-bedroom apartment?
Oh, in a place like L.A., I can't even begin to conceive.
No, well, back then, it was $300 a month. That was my rent. That was how much I was paying a month, $300 a month, okay? And it was, you know, one of those old-school apartments that had the, you know, the wash porch where you could wash and dry, you know?
Yeah.
And great apartment, $300 a month. Now, I don't know how much that apartment is to be now. It wouldn't be $300 a month. But, like, I have a friend that lives in Studio City. She has a one-bedroom apartment. It's a gorgeous apartment. $1,400 a month. Okay, let's just say, for shits and giggles, that the same apartment that I was going to move into back in 1988 was $300 a month. And now, the inflation and whatnot and so forth is probably about, it's just a little bit apart, so it's probably about $1,100 to $1,200 a month. But then again, nobody's making that kind of money. I mean, there are people, don't get me wrong, because they wouldn't go to that apartment. But for the most part, you know, $7 an hour, really? And I see these people who have to, you know, they don't want to pay the people who take care of their kids a decent rate, wage. And I'm like, okay, these people are taking care of your children. I would think that you would want to make sure they're happy. But the people that are preparing your food, it's getting to the point where...
No, but this is all based on the economics of Milton Friedman, who says, screw whether workers are happy, we want them terrified and desperate.
Yeah.
Because that's good for business. That's good for the economy.
And I don't understand. I don't get it. I mean, I know I'm a lot happier when I know that at the end of the day, I can pay my bills.
Yeah, you're a lot happier when at the end of the day you can lay your head down and go to sleep and not lay there staring at the ceiling wondering what kind of economic horror tomorrow is going to bring.
You know, like I was telling when I had Alex, I worked a second job because I wanted to. I was saving up for whatever I wanted to save up for. And once I saved up for it, I could quit. No big deal. It was just, you know, whatever. Now you people are working two or three jobs just to put together the peaceful, working two or three jobs just to have enough money that one job should bring.
Hey, you want to, are you driving right now, Tracy?
Yeah, but I'm good.
Okay, I wanted to make sure you wouldn't, like, you know, hit a light standard or anything. Freedom Industries over here has had another bankruptcy hearing in which they tried to sort out just how badly the people they poisoned are going to get screwed out of the bankruptcy. You remember Gary Southern, who showed up drinking that bottle of water talking about what a bad day he had?
Right.
He's back.
No, no.
Mm-hmm.
No, no, no.
So outside the courthouse today, after the bankruptcy hearing, he spoke to reporters again.
Why do they let these people get in front of a microphone? Or behind a microphone?
Right? Well, this is a Lulu. In describing the event in which he and his company poisoned 300,000 people's water, Gary Southern said, "This has been an extremely traumatic event for everybody to deal with, particularly our employees."
What?
Yeah. This event has been particularly traumatic for the employees of Freedom Industry who caused the problem.
Oh, so it's the employees' fault.
Yeah. So the mothers who bathe their little itsy-bitsy babies in poison water, it has not been as traumatic for them, according to Gary Southern, as it has been for Freedom's employees. The school cook who passed out from noxious fumes and had to be taken to the hospital, the event has not been as traumatic for her as it has been for the employees and Gary Southern of Freedom Industries.
I tell you what, there's a special place in hell for them. A real special place. And it's going to be nice and warm and toasty. I have never understood
You there, Tracy? Uh-oh. I think we lost Tracy. No, this is for real. Kate White has the story over at WVGazette.com. The bankruptcy judge now says that there's very little money for anybody who got poisoned. But he's trying to make sure that they're able to pay their debts. The first person who will get paid out of this bankruptcy is the guy who bought the company in the first place, because he set up a dummy shell corporation to loan money to Freedom, so he stands first in line. And everybody else gets to pound sand. Hey, pennies on the dollar. Yeah, this really is the quote. This has been an extremely traumatic event for everybody to deal with, particularly our employees. We're absolutely committed to the people of the state of West Virginia in terms of our remediation of the facility and our employees, with whom we're working extremely hard to find them new positions for those that will be displaced as a result of the bankruptcy. That is the forefront of our focus and will continue to be so until we meet all of our obligations. Gee, what's your focus going to be after that, Gary? Going back to Florida and having a daiquiri on your boat there in the slip? This has been an extremely traumatic event for everybody to deal with, particularly our employees. Wow. Freedom owes money to about 240 unsecured creditors. There are at least 30 lawsuits against Freedom, and many of those unsecured creditors are the people who filed lawsuits after the company before its bankruptcy filing, but after they had poisoned the water of 300,000 human beings. Bear in mind, J. Clifford Forrest, who bought Freedom Industries as of the beginning of the year, will get paid first. And then the other secured creditors will get paid. You know, let's say Eastman Chemical, who manufactures this shit. Let's say that they delivered 20,000 gallons of this poison to Freedom Industries, and Freedom Industries still owes them for it. Oh, they're a secured creditor. They'll get paid before the poisoned people get paid, because the nature of our bankruptcy system is so upside down and bass-ackwards with corporate welfare that it cannot even be considered to be anything remotely fair or decent. Now, this is interesting. During the meeting Tuesday, that would be today, Gary Southern and the company's chief financial officer, Terry Klein, testified that chemicals had been removed from the property. Where'd they go? Well, if you look back to a February 5th article in the Charleston Gazette, you'll find out that they were being transferred to the facilities of Rosebud Mining of Katanning, Pennsylvania. Any Horn family commune members up in western PA? Think you might want to get active to find out if the same negligent son of a bitch who dumped 10,000 gallons of poison in the Elk River has it now has it sitting. What is Katanning sit next to? The Mon or the Allegheny or the Ohio? You might want to find out. You might want to put 500,000 people in front of Rosebud effing Mining and tell him to get that shit out of your world before he dumps it in your water too. Because see, J. Clifford Forrest cares more about money than he does about people. Dig? Yeah. 25 past the hour, and I want to extend more thanks to Glenn for helping us with fundraising this evening. Thank you very kindly, Glenn. Thanks to Sal. Thanks to our good friend Waggy. Thanks to Jeremy and Asa. Thank you all, and thank you to Sparky for getting it all started with his Pull the Pin Challenge for this Tuesday evening. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
Hey, what's happening?
Yeah, this is Jim in Louisiana.
I know. It's been a while, Jim.
Well, just got to...
I have to ask you first and foremost, are you in one of the areas where your water system has closed off the intake because of the oil spill that's closed 65 miles of the river?
I'm not sure. Louisiana's so polluted, I just drink the water and hopefully.
Oh, Jesus.
It's not quite as bad as you, but.
Well, no, it's just gotten real bad. Because of this massive spill in the Mississippi River, some 65,000 gallons.
Yeah, I saw that. I think that might be below where I am. If that's more in New Orleans, this is across the lake. So, the sky deity, sky god, bearded dude on the lake, which but so far, protected me, even though I don't believe him.
Praise.
It was interesting what you were talking about, the Satanist cake.
Yes, oh, really?
Yeah, my favorite,
I'm particularly fond of the brimstone frosting.
Yeah, instead of just one, maybe I should get a trinity of Satanist cakes. What do you think,
No, I think you could. Yeah, I think you should get 6.66 of them.
Exactly. Yeah, it's interesting. It goes back to the old thing, money talks and bullshit walks, it seems like a lot of people don't really quite get that, Or maybe I'm just naive.
I think you are a hard-bitten realist.
Yeah. Being down here and just the whole attitude seeing down here, and what they're doing. I mean, like you said, that big spill that happened. I just heard about it the other day, but I just. I've noticed, I've lived here off and away. I lived here for 20 years, but growing up, it seemed like the news was a lot harder hitting, or a little bit more investigative than now it is. Now the local news, but I hardly watch it, but when I do, it seems like it's almost doing commercials for any and every corporation there is, and that's both local and, the corporate media. I don't think that's my imagination.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, it's just like it's just incredible. I guess I'm getting used to it. And then, you try and talk to somebody, and they're like, you people kind of objective. It's like, that's good. They'll go to the court system, a lawyer or two I know, and he's even involved in some of the law, peripherally and maybe somewhat semi-directly with the lawsuits, with the oil spill from a couple of years ago. Remember that little oil spill?
Yes.
And he's even, he kind of thinks, just wait, the legal system will take care of everything. He's got a real... busload of faith for the legal system, which I kind of gave up on. I mean, I have totally given up on once in a while, blind mice finds a piece of cheese, my mouse find a piece of cheese. But I don't know, it just seems, and I know, and I kind of realized, because I know a little bit about history, and it seems like it's always been kind of corrupt, but it just seems it's just in-your-face corrupt now. Do you get that feeling, too? Is that just my imagination?
No. It's out in the open. It's ball. It's barefaced. I mean, it's, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, and then you try and talk to somebody, like, it's pointless, you know, just, that's the way it is, and then you try and talk about changing it, and they roll their eyes, you know, they know you're from another planet or something, so, it's kind of disparaging. I guess it's kind of the same thing with you in West Virginia, you know. And I guess also similar to when I've talked with Mike, you know, our buddy Mike Malloy, he doesn't even talk politics with people locally too much because it's a waste of time, and I've kind of reached that point, you know, so.
Well, do Jim, try to keep track of this spill because it's ugly business. Among other things, St. Charles Parish has closed its drinking water intakes along the Mississippi River.
Oh, wow. I'm in St. Tammany. I'll have to check where St. Charles is.
I'm assuming it's along the Mississippi River.
Right.
But that's a pretty broad definition down there because it's kind of all over the place, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the river's real big, but then you got other rivers, a couple other rivers. St. Tammany, I'm trying to figure out what's... Yeah, I'm almost certain we get our water from... Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe there's some sort of spring water thing. I don't know. I know it's probably from the Mississippi. I'm almost certain because we're not really that far. I'm not really that far from Orleans Parish, about a little bit less than an hour drive, if that long. So it's probably.
And of course, you guys have been a toxic wasteland for ages, right?
Since I was born, probably.
When you juxtapose that against the magic that is that region, and it, I mean, I've always felt a sense of kinship between Appalachia and your region, Jim, except for the fact that you guys have much better cooking. Because both regions have been exploited and basically sold to the highest bidder, and the well-being of the people be damned. But,
yeah.
You know, Appalachia is beautiful in its temperate rainforest kind of way, and well, you know, the bayou region of Louisiana is just unspeakably beautiful if you can sort of overlook all the refineries and chemical plants.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe because I've lived here, and I, you know, when I remember when I was like 17, you know, right, you know, Carter got elected, and I thought, well, maybe things will get a little bit better, and then Reagan, and then you had the Republican run.
And everything just went to hell.
Yeah, and then, like talking to people down here, even back then, you know, they were just, you know, they couldn't wait to get. It's almost like was it you were talking the other day, a couple of shows ago, about like the Confederate soldiers. Back in history, the ones who really fought and died were the poor ones, and they didn't get anything out of slavery. They owned any slaves.
No, in fact, I was going to mention something last night because I was talking to Bill, Mr. Stress, about that wonderful documentary called Muscle Shoals about the rise of the recording industry there in Northwest Alabama. The guy that the history of the man that the documentary centers on, Rick Hall, grew up dirt poor in a section of Northwest Alabama called the Freedom Hills. They are literally some of the last low hills of the Appalachians, and those Freedom Hills were called the Freedom Hills for a reason. because folks who lived there prior to the Civil War really didn't have a dog in that whole let's maintain slavery hunt.
And they realized it?
And they realized it. In point of fact, there was a... they started out an infantry unit, but they were turned into a cavalry unit. I think they were called the 4th Alabama, and they were a federal unit of the Union Army. And they dogged the hell out of the Confederate Army all across northwest Alabama. And I think they even saw service on up into Tennessee and Virginia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the 4th Alabama.
Well, at least not everybody down here is so stupid. I mean,
No, and Winston County, Alabama, seceded from Alabama when Alabama seceded from the Union.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Because they were all just dirt farmers and didn't own any slaves and didn't have a dog in the hunt.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like they're going back to trying to get it. I mean, keeping wages down and benefits and part-time work and everything, and just trying to get it back to that slave mentality. It's not that I don't seem to see it that far away, unfortunately. I mean, I think Obama kind of tried some things, but I think to some extent his hands are tied, and I think he's a realist to some extent, but, then I didn't want to get, blown away, and not that that would necessarily happen, but it's happened once or twice before. I don't think that you're familiar with those times. Because if you go too far, I have no doubt that, the corporations who really run the country have no problem killing people as they are doing in your state and in my state and throughout the country. If there's a dollar to be made and somebody has to die to make that dollar, that's why we have 7 million people on the planet. We can always get some more.
Kill all you want, we'll make more.
Until
the rapture comes.
I think the rapture is going to come in the form of the ecological breakdown somehow. I mean, with the climate change and what they're doing to your state with the coal drilling and the coal mining and the fracking they're doing all over anywhere they can. Bad moon horizon. So, all right. Well, I was just giving you a call. I'll be trying to call you more frequently.
I always worry when we don't hear from folks for a while.
It was just this is my friend, my job situation had kind of changed, and then I heard you can talk. I've been listening to you a lot, but I heard you singing the praises of Window 8 and just hating my God dealing with it. It's just like, oh, man. So sometimes I'm actually trying to get on, and I'm having trouble getting your show. I don't know what. I got to figure it out. So I've got the Windows 8 book for dummies, so we're trying to read up on that and figure out what I'm doing wrong.
Windows 8 is a trial of the soul. That's all there is to it.
You are so right.
Well, Jim, you have yourself a good evening, and don't drink the water.
All right. I have blue beer. The blueberry beer. Blue. I have a blue one.
Oh,
all right.
Sounds tasty. You take care. That's our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana Stan. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, a pox on Windows 8, and may a foul there be the inventor's reward.
I'm getting better, but I'm still not there, Jim.
Oh, never mind. I don't want to get into that. Good Lord, I know exactly what you're saying. you know, as long as you can find the start button and try to get somebody on the phone to help you with it. That's some rough stuff. Very exasperating.
Very much so.
Yeah, just a couple things. Number one, today is spay and neuter day.
Yes, I saw your note, and I was going to make sure that I made mention of it. But
and every ten seconds, they're put down. Cats, dogs, anything they can, I guess. But I mean, you know, it's something to think of. And that guy was going on about. He went on about so many things about not abortion, but nonetheless, businesses and gay people and stuff like that.
Yes, yes, Brian Fisher.
Oh, he's really quite an apologist for his positions. That's for sure.
Yeah, let's at least be candid. He's an apologist. He's an apologist for his own hatred, and the hatred of others.
Well, I guess you're right there. Absolutely, absolutely. You know, one thing I wanted to mention, just historically, and this was back during the salad days of the Third Reich, when you know they wanted to encourage all these illegal births and stuff like that. And I was watching a documentary the other night where. They would send boys and girls to these, Hitler youth camps. Hitler youth for the boys and the Hitler maidens for the girls. And one girl had written a letter back to her mother saying, well, you know, we have a good time, but, the boys are nearby. And of all the 40 girls here, 36 of them are pregnant.
That wasn't accidental.
And her mother went up to the camp, was going to come up to the camp and talk to the person in charge, because she was not real happy about her daughter becoming a Führer bride, you know?
Yeah, you can imagine.
And she was told by her daughter, you do, and I'll get the Gestapo on you, and you won't be there anymore. So, I mean, you know, that's a good example of some of the stuff that was going on in a lot of those children who were born in those as Führer brides. They didn't turn out too well at all. So, I mean, you know, basically it's you have one state that is encouraging reproduction without responsibility or state responsibility, and then, you know, you have the other side of the situation too, that's for sure. But nonetheless, there it is, and there you have it. And it appears to me as though it's getting a bit chilly.
It is right smart cold, at least here. I've got the little electric foot warmer going, and thank heaven for that. But let's see. Yeah, we're down to about 60 degrees here in the studio. It'll be pretty cool by tomorrow morning. And but hopefully, you know, hopefully, Jim, after this last hurrah of the vortex, maybe with the will this qualify as March coming in like a lion?
Yeah,
let's hope so.
Well, by the way, I did I saw the number on MSNBC about the Arizona governor and that bill that she was going to either sign or veto, and they had a number. I called and it was a message for her, and I said, please veto this bill.
I think she's getting a lot of those calls. I'm glad you made it, Jim. This is a political test. This is a question of who is more powerful, the people with the money or the teabaggers with their
Well, this thing has gone up in about five or six states like this, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Kansas, Arizona, Tennessee, Georgia, that I, off the top of my head, yeah.
Well, there are some things that just won't die hard, you know? And so I think she has until Saturday to veto that bill, and I'm fairly sure she will. I mean, when John McCain comes out and tells her to veto it, you know damn well she will.
Sadly, Jim, I don't know that. I mean, if she doesn't sign it, if she just leaves it on her desk, does it become law without her signature?
You mean like a table veto or a pocket veto? That's what it's called. When they leave it in their desk for 10 days, then it's automatically assumed signed. I mean, under the law.
That's federal. That's what I'm asking. I don't know about Arizona.
I'm pretty sure they follow the same guidelines.
So this thing, if she just left it alone for the sake of her own political hide because she didn't want to anger the teabaggers, but she didn't sign it into law because she didn't want to anger, say, Intel, American Airlines, Marriott, and Apple, and the thing just became law without, can it become, in Arizona, can it become law without her signature? I don't know.
Well, I don't know that either, but I would assume that she will probably act in her own best interest and in the state's best interest and refuse to sign that bill and veto it outright. I mean, they always have a way out. I mean, you know, under the law, silence implies consent, right?
Right. That's the way I was always taught.
Your title comes to Terry, if I'm about this, whatever, but nonetheless, there it is. Not exactly well-spoken Latin, but nonetheless, that's the axiom of the law. But nonetheless, I don't think she will be over, you know.
But you know, the thing is, it doesn't, you know, if it doesn't become law in Arizona, that doesn't mean that, for instance, Georgia has gone absolutely around the bend crazy. There have been like three debates.
What are they doing?
Well, one, they've introduced a similar bill. Two, they've got like six or seven hardcore right-wing Republicans running for the Republican nomination, which is essentially the victory of in the election, for a U.S. Senate seat. And you couldn't get any of them to admit that, that science is science. You know, one of the people running for that Senate seat and who has a good chance of winning is Paul Brown, the guy who said all science is lies from the pits of hell.
I wonder if he says that when he has to go to the hospital and be confronted by the wonders of medical science. What if he says that too?
I think he says it when he's talking to a room full of, you know, good fire-breathing hard-shell Baptists.
Uh-huh.
When he says it.
But he says on the outside, okay, I get it.
But I have no doubt that he gets himself a flu and a pneumonia shot every year or so that's derived from mutated, evolved strains of flu virus.
I'm sure. Oh, and initially, when you brought up this thing about that guy with the gun and who blew his brains out, boy, that was something, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Isaac pointed out that he did a public service because since he did himself in it, that meant that he didn't later on shoot one of the three kids that were living in the house with him.
Ah, good Lord. I mean, stupidity does have a habit of getting its way. Oh, by the way, Russian roulette, I mean, I think I sent you an email on that. It got its start back in 1917 when I think Russian officers would in Romania or someplace like that, would get drunk, you know, all that liquid courage, and they put one round in the chamber and spin it and do stuff like that. That's where the term comes from.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't perpetuating an ancient slur or anything.
No, it's just...
I mean, if they invented it, it's theirs.
Yeah, and it was also mentioned in some type of book in 1937.
I mean, you've got phrases like Russian roulette, Molotov cocktail.
Well, those are real things now. I mean,
yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, if you're in a tank, you certainly don't want to see one of those things coming at you.
Nope.
And they're pretty easy to make, too. Just a bottle and some, kerosene and...
Gasoline. Or
whatever.
And a nicely, tightly stoppered rag.
Uh-huh. And let's light it, and I'll guarantee you one thing, it will definitely get that particular tank driver's attention. If not, well, he just might not have any more attention. But, I mean, you know, there are a number of things, Molotov cocktail. I mean, I'm sure Molotov enjoyed the idea of that thing being named after him. You know the Russians, how they like to give accolades to people, right?
Yeah. Hey, by the way, an update coming in from Danny in Louisiana, Stan. He says, I read that the Arizona law will become law if Brewer doesn't either sign it or veto it. He says, just another example of how some in this country have lost their damn minds. We have a few states I think we need to sell to Mexico or Canada. Hell, sell them to Iraq, Danny says.
So the only way it can be stopped is an active veto.
It has to be actively actively vetoed.
Well, that's the way it is at the federal level. I mean, the president can just put it in his drawer, leave it for 10 days, and then it becomes law. And that be the way it is. But nonetheless, we'll just wait and see. I mean, they don't have any consideration as the idea. I mean, according to statistics, I think maybe 10% of the population is probably gay.
That's the generally accepted number.
You've got a lot of these people who have a lot of discretionary spending ability that others don't have. And, you know, that's a lot of money. And not only for the financial thing, but for the rights of people to, well, as you say, to love whom they wish and to do what they wish to do as far as marriages or whatever are concerned.
By the way, a little update on the origins of Russian roulette. It was said to have been begun with the Russian Nagant M1895 revolver. And it first appears in
Romania.
It first appears in writing in a short story from 1937 by Georges Sardes.
Yeah,
Sardes.
That's it. 1937. But the first instance of it, well, I think according to the same Wikipedia thing they're reading, is 1917 in Romania. Who knows? Oh, by the way, one other thing. MSC pointed out Pope Francis is ordering a complete audit of the Vatican Bank.
Oh, I read that. And there are a lot of nervous prelates, are there not?
Yeah, it's going to be kind of like part of The Godfather Part 3, you know?
Yeah, the less entertaining parts of that movie. Of the three, that one's the least entertaining.
Right, and of course, then again, the Pope got a big plus, and Putin for what he pulled off with those girls gets a big zero, according to MSNBC.
And
I don't know what those girls were doing, and I'll tell you the truth, if I were in their shoes, I believe I'd be making tracks. I'd be just getting the hell out of there.
I sympathize with that assertion, Jim, but I also understand why you would want to go back and continue to agitate for freedom.
Well, Bob, you can't do much agitating when you're in the cellars of the Lubyanka.
That's true. They were released, however.
They were released?
Yeah.
Well, I can guarantee you one thing. The police sure had a hold on them today. And, you know, I'll tell you, Putin is somebody whom I respect, and I respect for a number of reasons. I mean, by respect, I mean, you know, I walk very carefully. I would walk very carefully with
him. Yeah, you respect him the way you respect somebody with a gun pointed at you.
Well, and he's nobody to be fooled with. I mean, you know, they pulled that stunt off when the Olympics opened, saying that one of the torchbearers was one of his mistresses. And I could not believe that. And that was just totally uncalled for. I mean, but, you know, by and by, in spite of all the trepidation and fear about the Olympics, it all came off very well. Unfortunately, all the opening and closing ceremonies were just cut to pieces by NBC.
I saw a story earlier today that mentioned that a lot of Americans canceled their cable service, and then went over and started watching watching Canadian broadcasting, giving a Canadian location somehow or another, so that they could see unchopped up, unexpurgated coverage.
Yeah, I saw. I did that on CBC. Sure,
yeah.
Did.
And I also saw that. Last name is Ovechkin from the Washington Capitals. tendered a formal apology to the Russian people for not winning the gold in hockey before returning home to play to resume the NHL season.
And one more thing, the women's skating competition, that Russian girl who won that thing fell on her ass, but she got the gold medal. And the Korean girl, who is an ambassador for UNICEF, who gave all of her winnings to the people who were the victims of the tsunami, and all of her other winnings to the victims of the Japanese nuclear thing in Fukushima, got the silver. And there was a lot of raising hell about that too, because
there's a lot of beauty in figure skating. But at the end of the day, there is no way to objectively quantify who wins and who loses, and that's one of the most frustrating things about watching it.
Well, the thing about it is, if you fall on your ass and if you don't complete the maneuvers, that's definitely points against you. And they've gone to a new system, digital system, which is I think a lot fairer. But nonetheless, this Russian girl got the thing, but the Korean girl, the South Korean girl, who skated flawlessly. No screw.
Got stiffed.
And she is a very fine person. And like I say, she's an ambassador for UNICEF and also has given hundreds of thousands of dollars to people who needed relief.
So I guess that was a mercy gold. Hey, Jim, we got to get out of here.
Okay. Good night.
All right. You take care. Stay warm. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling, and that brings us to the close of the evening's program. Please join back in tomorrow evening for Prayer Meeting Wednesday, the high point of many members of the Horn Family Communes Week. Thanks going out again to Sparky for getting us started with his Pull the Pin February Challenge, and to everybody who responded to it. Thank you very much. We actually met tonight's fundraising goal all taken together. So we will begin with a fresh fundraising slate tomorrow, and that is ever so important in keeping this whole thing up and running. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox, and thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. Acact.org is where you go to learn about the ongoing health crisis and human rights crisis that is mountaintop removal in Appalachia. There's a take action button where you can reach out to your members of Congress and your senators, telling them you want support for economic and social justice in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone of Central Appalachia. When we make progress because you stand with people who are otherwise rendered voiceless. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Hey, remember, Dr. Bill starts at 3 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. Tune in. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.